Hello and welcome to Lush. Conservation means different things to different people, but for many researchers and scientists interested in the breeding success of the hen harrier in England, one of our most highly protected but equally highly illegally persecuted birds of prey, one government-backed conservation solution has created more controversy than usual. The suggestion that, under license, some broods should be managed or meddled with on behalf of the grouse shooting industry, as a wide tranche of conservationists might describe it. Dr. Mark Avery, a former conservation director with the RSPB, and now one of the most influential conservationists and writers in the country, recently launched a fundraiser to bring about a judicial review of the licensing of hen harrier brood meddling. My name is Charlie Moores, and I went to see Mark to discuss why he'd gone down this track and just what the funds raised would be used for. On February the 26th, and I should say we're talking on the 5th of March, you put up a post on your blog that began, "Last week I met two barristers and a couple of solicitors and was advised that there is a good legal case on which we can challenge the ridiculous plan by Michael Gove's Department of the Environment, or DEFRA, to remove eggs or chicks of hen harriers from grouse moors, a scheme they call brood management, but which is so unpopular and derided in conservation circles that it is known as brood meddling." Now, before I properly congratulate you on this staggeringly good idea to take the government to court and what that good legal case might be, I thought I'd begin this conversation with a quick primer on the hen harrier and the red grouse and brood meddling for anyone who hasn't been following this story. First off, the hen harrier, a rather lovely bird of prey with the highest legal protection that should be common but isn't because, as it will have done for millennia, it includes red grouse chicks amongst what is actually quite a varied diet, so it's persecuted relentlessly on moorland intensively managed for grouse. That sound about right?
Yeah, it is. And it's good that you mentioned that they eat red grouse, but that's not their main food, because sometimes I forget to say that when I'm giving talks about this. But so they mostly eat voles and meadow pipits and skylarks and all sorts of stuff. And you said they were a rather lovely bird. They are just gorgeous. They are.
I felt that was a bit subjective while I wrote it, that of everything I've written down, that was the most open to kind of.
Yeah, I don't know why so many of us love this bird so much. But they are fantastic. I mean, all birds are brilliant. All wildlife is brilliant. Even plants are pretty good. Not as good as birds, obviously. But
this comes from a man who did his PhD on bats.
Though. I did do my PhD on bats. Yeah, bats are brilliant
too. Bats are brilliant, okay.
Yeah, but hen harriers, as a bird watcher, then they just make any day's bird watching. A day when you see a hen harrier, you'll probably remember that bit of the day for a long time.
You know, I think it's part of the habitat and location that you need to go to. You have to make an effort to see a hen harrier. It's not going to go floating past your garden.
And you can't be sure that you will see one, even if you go to the right place. So it's a bit of a treat when the birds let you see them.
It's a proper birder's bird.
Yeah, but they are fantastic. The males are grey with black wing tips. And white rump, and the females and immatures a bit bigger, called ringtails. They're basically brown with a big white square rump and dark bands on the tail, which is why we call them ringtails. But yeah, so they're more than rather lovely.
I am put in my place. Right, I'm going to carry on with this.
Yeah.
Brood meddling. The temporary removal of hen harriers from grouse moors during the breeding season is one of six action points in DEFRA's ludicrous hen harrier action plan, which was sold to those of us who are interested in such things as a way to rescue the English hen harrier breeding population from virtual extinction, but was in fact largely interpreted as a way to keep the grouse shooting industry happy by removing young birds from moorland and putting them somewhere else, miles away, where there are no red grouse. Still sound about right?
Almost right.
Okay.
So, so this is part of the brood management bit, which we call brood meddling. I don't know, it's about 3 or 4 years old, this actual term. So although grouse moor owners and managers will tell you this is a technique used all over the place, and it's tried and tested, and it's just like reintroductions that real conservationists do. It's completely different. And what you got slightly wrong was that it is to take the eggs or chicks away from grouse moors, rear them in captivity, but then they're going to be put back more or less in the same place. I mean, it's slightly unclear from the plan. A condition of the license would be that if they are taken from an SPA, which is a designated area, a special protection area, then they have to be put back in that same SPA. The SPAs are quite big. Large bits of the Yorkshire Dales are an SPA.
Yeah, exactly.
So they don't have to be put back in exactly the same place.
So they can be miles away, but they still should be within that special protection area.
That's right. So one of the things we were a bit worried about was that this bit of the daft plan was going to be linked to another bit of the daft plan, which is a reintroduction of hen harriers in southern England, because you need some hen harriers if you're going to reintroduce them. And we thought, well, maybe they're going to take the chicks from grouse moors and then reintroduce those chicks in southern England. But that's ruled out because they're not allowed to do that. So that's good. Although I have a feeling that's what the grouse moor owners had in mind initially.
And that was ruled out because under IUCN guidelines, unless the threat's been taken away, you can't get a license for a reintroduction.
And I think a reintroduction into the lowlands is, it's thought that it would be likely to be more effective if birds from the continent were used, because it's a commoner trait for them to nest in the lowlands. But I'm slipping into the mistake that we make sometimes, because this plan is just daft.
Yeah.
And there's only one thing we have to do to save the hen harrier, and that's stop people killing it. And killing hen harriers is illegal, and has been illegal since 1954. So the only thing you have to do for there to be loads more hen harriers, hundreds and hundreds of pairs more in the UK, is to stop criminals killing them. And all this complicated stuff about reintroduction or brood management is a sideshow and a distraction from what the government ought to be doing.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the thing we need to remember, isn't it? This is almost set up as a diversion to move people away from talking about the real problem to talking about imaginary solutions.
Absolutely. You should have been a lawyer. That's what my lawyers say too.
Is that what they say?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So the flaws in the plan, in quotes, were obvious. For example, there are so few pairs of harriers breeding in England that it should be unthinkable to interfere with them in any way. Anyway, they have full legal protection. And there just aren't very many of them.
Yeah, and it may be impossible anyway, because in the last couple of years, there have only been, last year, 2017, there were seven pairs that tried to nest in England. None of them nested on grouse moors.
No.
I think three of them were successful. Three or four were successful. The year before, what's that, 2016, I think there were four pairs, weren't there? And I think three of them were successful, and they didn't nest on grouse moors either. So this is something that's been given to grouse moor owners as a little treat. That's my interpretation of what DEFRA are doing what Natural England have licensed, rather shockingly. And yet this is to solve a problem that nobody's got. Now, it would be quite interesting if this year, in 2018, there were 50 pairs of hen harriers all of a sudden nesting on grouse moors, because that would tell us something about what's been going on in the past. But I kind of doubt it, because all through the autumn and the winter, every few weeks, there's been news of hen harriers that were hatched last summer that have been satellite tagged by OSBB or by Natural England or by others. Some of them have died naturally, as you'd expect.
As you expect, yeah.
But some of them have just disappeared under very mysterious circumstances, although they're not so mysterious because they all seem to disappear under the same circumstances, that they're quite happy living in one place. They go off and go to a grace more, and then suddenly they're transmitter stops working. So we know that they are killed on grass moors. So it doesn't look as though the cohort of 2017 hen harriers is doing any better than any of the other cohorts. So,
no.
But again, let's not make it too complicated.
No, let's
not. If people stop killing them, there'd be lots of hen harriers nesting in the uplands of England, in places in East and Southern Scotland where they're missing. You and I would be able to go to the Peak District and see hen harriers displaying in, well, this time of year if the weather's really good. So give the, certainly in a few weeks' time.
Yeah.
Or in the North York Moors or in the Yorkshire Dales. And you just
three wildlife crime hotspots on
absolutely
the trot there.
Funny. They're all national parks too, and they're all dominated by intensive grouse shooting.
Do you know, I think that's a really good point that a lot of people don't realise. I didn't realise that until I started, talking to people like yourself and really getting into this, that I thought a national park was a national park. It was the equivalent of a nature reserve. But there is so much shooting and so much keeping and so much wildlife crime inside our national parks. It's scandalous.
Well, there's a kind of field guide to national parks. There's a list of categories of national park because the government can call anything a national park. And on the wall here, you can see a map of the USA. Well, the first national park was Yellowstone.
Indeed.
It's big. There's little built development. Nature conservation is the main land use in that place. If you put Yellowstone as kind of Category 1 national park, then our national parks are kind of Category 7 national park. I think there might be 6, actually. they're basically a planning authority which will stop you painting your front door a garish purple colour and won't allow you to put in big new picture windows in your bijou attractive stone cottage. But they don't do much for wildlife. Not enough trees, not enough wildness, too many sheep, too much shooting, not enough wildlife at all.
And
national parks are a bit rubbish.
When I started going to national parks, obviously as a bird watcher, you thought they were beautiful. You thought these were pristine landscapes. Yeah, they were working landscapes, but something had been kept. But when you go back now and you understand the effect that the shooting industry's had, I don't know, that's not a term you particularly like, but...
No, that's fair enough.
Has had on that landscape.
Ridiculous. And if you read things like George Monbiot's Feral, and if you read all the stuff about rewilding, which is another subject in itself, and quite complicated because rewilding means different things to different people.
But
the idea of a gentler approach to managing the countryside, which could give benefits in terms of better water quality, lowered flood risk, more carbon storage, and more wildlife. Well, where would you start doing that? Surely you'd start doing that in national parks if you were going to do it anyway. You'd say the Peak District, we want to increase forestry so that the woodlands creep up the valleys and up the gullies onto the moorland. We want ring ouzels to be sitting in the scrub right at the top of these gullies singing. You'd expect national parks to be the places that when we get around to reintroducing lynx into the UK, we pick the best national park. But
they
you'd never dream of letting
minutes.
A lynx go in our national parks because they're full of people up with guns.
They should be like the core of where all these introductions or reintroductions can take place.
Yeah.
Put the animals in there and allow them to spread naturally out, but it just wouldn't happen.
Well, it is one of the good things that Michael Gove has said that in the 25-year plan for the environment, which came out a few weeks ago, he said that there was going to be a review of national parks and what they're for. Now, like many things that he said, you have to give him the credit for saying the right things, but it's too early to see how many of them will be done. But, people ought to look out for that, because we all ought to pile into consultations when they come out saying, I want a proper national park.
Yes, very definitely. Michael Gove has been saying some good things, but he's also been flip-flopping on things like the Badger Coal, so it's difficult to know where he's going to go at the moment. And an awful lot of the things he's suggesting, and this is way off topic, actually probably isn't way off topic, is going to be due to how prepared he is to pay for enforcement, whatever regulations he brings in, which brings us kind of neatly back to hen harriers.
Yeah.
They are protected. Brings us back also to this brood meddling plan and your great idea. So to get us back, this introduction was only going to be 5 minutes, but it's turning into the whole podcast, which is great. But anyway, it seemed possible that common sense would prevail and this utterly stupid plan would be dropped before any licenses to meddle were issued. But in January 2018, Natural England issued a license that will permit brood meddling to begin this year. And all hell broke loose, thanks to a rather good idea by yourself, Mark, to sue the government.
Well,
or more accurately, to ask for a judicial review
of Natural England's decision to license this plan.
Suing the government sounds really dramatic.
Suing the government is basically what we're trying to do. Yeah. So it's us against the powers that be. So I think it is worth saying that the RSPB is totally opposed to this idea of brood management. Chris Packham, one of our heroes, is totally opposed to it. In fact, he resigned as the president of the Hawk and Owl Trust when they said they quite fancied the idea. So he said, well, I don't, I'm off. That great blog, Raptor Persecution UK, they're against it. Rare Bird Alert, they have done a couple of polls of people on social media and got, I don't know, 80% of people were against it.
Yeah.
And that was open to anyone, not just birders. Birdwatch, the best birding magazine, which I write for, they're against it. You can't find anybody who's for this. So everybody is against it, apart from the shooters, the government, and Natural England, which is a bit odd. So you give me the credit for this being my great idea. Well, like lots of ideas, it's only a little bit my idea. In fact, several people said, oh, this is awful. Surely we could mount a legal challenge. And my initial reaction was, well, I wonder. But rather than just going, oh, we probably can't, I went off and spoke to some lawyers, because the law is a strange place. I mean, and a previous life I've had, not previous life as a criminal, previous life as working for a nature conservation organisation. I've had
standing in the dock, you know, just strange things.
That's right. I've had a few dealings with the law, and sometimes, as a normal person, sometimes it comes out and you think, wow, that's fantastic. I didn't expect it to go as well as that. And other times it comes out rather badly and you think, how can that possibly be right? So talk to the lawyers. I talked to some lawyers and they said, you've got a good case here. Not just a vague idea of a case, but a good case. So I asked them whether they were up for doing this and they said yes, which gave me asked the task of having to raise some money, because lawyers don't work for nothing. But I did, they're very nice lawyers we've got, and they're working for very little money for a lawyer.
Right.
But so launched this crowdfunding campaign.
On a site called Crowd Justice, which I'd never heard of before.
No, I haven't heard of it before, but looking at it, it's what you'd expect for something called Crowd Justice. Yeah. It's a crowdfunding site for legal cases. So all the lawyers know about it. It's been very effective. They're very good so far as well. So I know a few other crowdfunding sites, but this one, I've had a couple of conversations with real people who give you advice. It's very easy to use the site. They're very quick and responsive. So Yeah, I'm quite impressed by them.
So you launched on February the 26th.
Yeah, that was
for £5,000
ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was on the Monday morning. Amazing. And it's a Monday now. Yes, it's
you
a
were,
long time
you were
ago.
Originally looking for £5,000.
Well, we definitely needed £5,000.
Just to get started.
Just to get started, yeah. And we got we got £10,500 on the first day.
It was incredible, wasn't it?
It is. This is... And you just can't tell. Well, I'm a bit cautious, I think.
I read out what you said on your blog on February the 27th? Because I thought so perfectly put. You put, starting a crowdfunding campaign is a little like throwing a party. When you start, you imagine what great fun it will be and how everyone will want to come. Then as the time approaches, you begin to wonder whether it's going to be such a success. And as the hour draws near, you wonder whether anyone will turn up at all.
Yeah, well, it was like that. It absolutely was like that.
Boy, did they turn up.
They did, yeah. So, it was launched at 7 in the morning. And I got a train from Wellingborough Station at 10:30 that morning. So you can imagine I was looking at the figures. All the way. I don't know what it had got to. It was about £1,000 an hour. Then it had another boost at lunchtime when people, you know, come back and look at Twitter and read my blog and go, oh, yeah, I've now got time to get my credit card out and donate. And then there was another boost in the evening. So, yeah, by the time I really looked at it at the end of the day when I went to bed, £10,500, I thought, well, that's
amazing,
not a bad party, is it?
It's really cool.
And so by mid-afternoon on the Friday, we'd got to the 25,000.
Yeah, because you changed the target. It was originally 5, wasn't it? That's to get going, but 25,000 was what
you
actually needed.
Well, that should cover everything. It's not necessarily going to cover everything depending on how complex things are and what the other side does and a few other things like that. But basically, we are funded and I'm hoping I won't have to come back and ask anyone for any more money because people have been so generous. I mean, it just shows how strong the feelings are.
Yeah.
And, you know, when people are really annoyed about something, they need an outlet so that they can try and make things better. And this legal challenge is not tilting at windmills. It is a serious bid to stop this thing that so many of us think is daft. And on legal advice, we can now say we think it's illegal. So we're trying to stop it. And when I say so many of us, I think it's 960 people now.
Yeah.
Which, again, our lawyers, who are kind of a bit more accustomed to seeing some of these crowdfunding things, they go, well, you've got so many people all chipping in, you know, tenners, 20 quid, some 50s, some bigger sums. But this is a crowd.
Yeah.
This is not...
And there's no product at the end. And
no, you don't get anything out of it.
There
afraid.
Isn't a, if you give me 100, I'll send you a signed photo.
No,
there was nothing. This is purely altruism. This is purely, as you put it, actually, on Twitter. Because I was going to ask you what you thought kind of motivated people to give. But you wrote, by issuing a license for brood meddling of hen harriers, you, Natural England, have stirred up a hornet's nest of opposition. And that's how it felt to me when I saw it.
Yeah.
And people I know, they're just boiling mad that this could be going ahead.
Yeah, and the reason we're mad is that if you had the UK hen harrier population lined up and able to speak and ask them to vote on whether they wanted breed meddling to go ahead or not, they'd all raise the wing that said, no, thank you. And if you ask them another question, would you like government really to get to grips with crime, wildlife crime against you lot? They'd raise the other wing and say, yes, please. So this is a distraction. And it's a waste of time and money, and it's not doing the right thing. And therefore, because we believe there are better alternatives, then under the Birds Directive, we think this is illegal. And there's some other bits too, but the way this works, shall I explain how it works?
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, because you mentioned the Aarhus Convention.
Oh, right.
Which I did look up.
No, no. Well, that's to do with how much it's going to cost us.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
But that's quite interesting. So the Aarhus Convention is a European convention. It's not an EU convention, but it's a European thing, which recognises that when you take a legal case on behalf of the environment,
right,
you are not seeking to make any money yourself. So I won't, and yeah, you won't, and all the other people who've donated don't gain financially if right, we win this case.
Not we're, even expecting a badge.
Seriously. No, don't even get a badge. But we're doing it for the public good. Well, yeah, we think we are, and there's a good case that we are. So why should we have to pay phenomenal costs if we're up against industry, which one is often up against, or up against government, who could spend as much money as they want fighting this case?
Our money.
Yeah, that's our money too. Yes. But the Aarhus Convention limits how much the other side can get from us if they win. And so that's already covered by the 25 grand.
See, okay.
So it's actually limited to £5,000 that we would pay the other side's costs. Because this is a legal case. It's a legal case.
Under environmental law.
For the environment. And that's, right, I think that's really important.
That's really, that's,
there are one or two lawyers who, hearing me say that, will be smiling and going, well, we've told you that in the past, Mark, and you've never seemed really that interested in this subject. But they were right, and now I'm really interested because it limits the costs. So that's Aarhus.
Right.
Shall I explain the judicial review process?
Exactly what is it that the lawyers are trying to do?
We are trying to show that the granting of the licence by Natural England was illegal under the Birds Directive. And as I say, one reason is that there are lots of other more sensible things that they ought to have done rather than this. There are other reasons why we think it's illegal, which I'm not going to go into now because I don't see why I should give all of our case away. So the way that you do this is that our lawyers last Wednesday, they sent a letter to Natural England, which is called a letter before action or a pre-action protocol letter, which is quite a short letter for lawyers. It's only 14 pages. And it sets out the bones of our legal case, saying, we want to challenge this. This is why we think you've done something illegal. Get back to us in 2 weeks. So we expect Natural England to respond to that with their short 20-page letter, which will no doubt say, nah, you're completely wrong. What we've done is not illegal. It's because of this, that, and the other.
Can I just interrupt quickly? Is that 2 weeks a request or 2 weeks is a legal obligation for them to reply?
It's what you'd expect them to be able to do because right, you have to get on with this. So, as you said, the license was issued in January, the 16th of January. You have 3 months to kick this process off. So our letter before action was sent on the 28th of February, which is just about halfway through that 3 months.
Yeah.
Which is quite quick. That's quite quick because it's quite complicated. So they now have to come back to us after cogitating for a reasonable time, but not dragging it out. So we'd expect to reply in about 2 weeks' time. And then we'll have to read their reply, and their reply will scare me rigid, I'm pretty sure. But our lawyers will go, nah, nothing to worry about there. And then we decide whether to go to the next stage, which I expect we will. And that means making a much more lengthier legal case and asking for a judge to hear our case and the other side's case in a timely manner, which is quite important for this because this whole brood meddling thing would start in the birds' breeding season, which right. they're going to be sky dancing soon, laying eggs in April, say. So that's when people could start taking eggs, taking chicks in June, say. Well, we want to stop it, so we've got to get on with it. So we'd hope that the court would give us leave to have a judicial review heard, and that if they can't do it fairly quickly, they tell Natural England that they better put the licence on hold until all this is sorted out. Right. But we'll see. That's all down the line. But we're at a position at the moment where we've sent off our letter.
Right.
Woohoo. That's a good thing. It's a very impressive letter, too. When you read it, you think, that's very good.
Yeah.
So now we're in the, we sent them a cracking letter phase, and we have to wait for about 2 weeks for them to come back to us. Then we'll gear up for the next stage.
Wow. So that's moving actually very fast.
Well, that's the idea of judicial review, which they're not easy to win, and I'm not guaranteeing anyone that we will necessarily win.
No.
But the legal advice is we've got a good case. So rather than sitting around moaning about what's going to happen, let's try and stop it. And we've got nearly 1,000 people who've chipped in their, 10, 20, 30 quids to stop it.
Yeah.
So I'm very grateful to all of them. And if there were no chance at all, I wouldn't have asked you all to join in.
No, exactly, exactly. And I would never imagine you doing something like that. As soon as I saw that you'd done this and what you wrote on the blog and what you put on the post, you were very cautious and you were very honest. And I just thought, great, yeah, I'll chip in. It stopped it's at around 26,000 and something this morning before I left home, I checked. Yeah. Are you still asking people to contribute?
No, I've asked the site to disable the pledging thing because I wondered whether to do it exactly when we got to 25K, but since I knew that there were some people who were dying to give us some money, then I left it over the weekend and it's just about stopped, I think. So, and I haven't paraded it for the last couple of days. So, I mean, as I say, it's possible might have to come back to people, hopefully other people rather than the 962, and say, we need a little bit more.
But what would that be for, do you think? What would you be advised?
It's if the other side do various things that make the whole process more difficult. Probably not going to happen.
Right.
So I think we're fully funded is the best.
That's such good news. And you've been so careful to say thank you repeatedly. And ever since I've known you, actually, whenever we've done sort of these campaigns, right from the start of the Hen Harry campaigns and things, you've always said, this isn't about me, this is about us. This whole way that this has been funded so quickly, that really proves that, doesn't it? Everyone's involved. It takes someone to lead it, Mark, and I won't let you get away with saying that you don't.
Yeah, but as I said, this wasn't really my idea. Well, it was various people's ideas.
Lots of people have good ideas, but you've got to take those ideas forward.
Well, I thought this was maybe not a good idea, but I did go and talk to some people. So I haven't got £25,000. The first 250 quid that went into the pot
was
250 quid. So that's 1% I put in straight away. But you got to thank people, haven't you? Because couldn't do it on my own. And actually, that is one of the attractions of campaigning, that, the e-petition that we got in 2016 with 123,077 signatures is because so many people supported it that it generated a debate, which hasn't changed the world yet, but it's a step towards changing the world. And this crowdfunder's the same. It's because people are actively wanting to support this cause. If people weren't keen, we couldn't go very far. And because people are keen, it increases my and other people's motivation to keep moving on. So if you all disappeared, they wouldn't, you know, I could just go out bird watching.
This has just seemed such like a such a positive thing to do that it could have a really positive outcome. It's really inspired a lot of people.
Well, success is not guaranteed, but wouldn't it be fantastic if we did win and did stop it? And at the moment, although the OSPB might decide to mount a judicial review, they're being a bit slow in making up their minds if they are going to. But you never know. They might decide that they're going to do something similar, which would be great. And we'd end up working with them, which would be good. But we've led the way.
Yeah.
And we want to stop this thing. And the only way to stop it really now is through the law. So let's use the law. And if we win, that'd be fantastic. If we lose, at least we know we haven't sat on our bums, moaned, but done nothing. Yeah, so exactly. Let's give it our best shot. And the lawyers are fantastic. They must waste an awful lot of their time playing over and over again videos of skydancing hen harriers because they all seem to be falling in love with this bird, which is absolutely right, because it's not just really lovely, it is a fantastic bird, and hen harriers can't hire good lawyers to help them.
No,
we can,
we need to,
and we have, so that's great.
So at the moment it's very much watch this space.
It is, and watch my blog, and there'll be updates on what's happening as soon as I know, or as soon as the lawyers say I can tell you.
Mark Avery, Dr. Mark Avery, thank you very much indeed.
Great to see you.
Dr. Mark Avery talking in March 2018. For more on Mark, check out his blog at markavery.info, which remarkably is often updated several times a day. If you'd like to learn more about the illegal killing of birds of prey, just search hen harrier or golden eagle or goshawk or red kite on the internet. We have other podcasts on illegal persecution of birds of prey here on the Lush Player too, including other conversations with Mark, with Chris Packham, and with Dr. Ruth Tingay, who writes on the excellent Raptor Persecution blog at raptorpersecutionscotland.wordpress.com. Thank you very much for listening. If you'd like to hear more from Lush, and our ever-growing archive contains interviews, debates, and stories with a wide range of charities, organisations, and individuals, please download the free Lush Player app, which is available for both Android and Apple.